Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good.
You got a headset, bro?
How are you doing? I got a new microphone going on.
Got a new microphone going on?
Yeah.
That's groovy. How's James?
Okay, Ta.
Yeah, has everyone got drinks? Because I've just noticed that I'm a bit early.
No, I haven't got mine yet. I thought you'd be later, so I'm
Right.
a bit peeved about that.
Sorry. Do you want a few minutes?
Yeah, 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Right, I'm going to take 2 minutes too.
All I wish we were recording that.
Hello, sorry
Yeah.
about that. Yep. Got
Everyone,
it.
you guys came back at the same time.
Oh,
That's weird.
that's timing.
Well, we were just having a
That
chat in the
is
kitchen,
timing.
weren't we, James?
We were.
We were just talking about Brian.
As usual.
As usual, yeah, that's right. And we decided that we'd let him join this week's podcast after all.
Oh, you guys are so swell.
Yeah. Now then, mine's recording, which is
Oh,
nice.
right,
That's
yeah,
nice, isn't it?
you want mine to record as well. Hold on a
Yeah, yeah,
sec.
yeah. Okay, I'm ready. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Casterbury's podcast with a K. With me, as ever, James McLean and Brian Terranova. Hi there, guys.
Hi there.
Hello, hello. Good weekend.
I've just gone and got for this particular podcast. I like to have in the afternoon one of those standard sort of instant lattes or latte. You know,
Right.
the ones that you have the powder in, you put the water in, and then you whisk together.
That's how you do it, is it?
Yeah, I usually have a sort of Nescafe one. I think it is. I might be wrong, which is good because it means there's no product promotion there. But I've actually switched. I'm trying Maxwell House one, which is actually a bit of product promotion there. And it doesn't taste like coffee. I can't quite work out what it tastes like.
Latte?
No. Oh, wait, maybe it does.
That is the point that they were trying to make. I mean, that is their achievement, isn't it? That is what they're
Maybe
trying to achieve. That's the aim, isn't it?
the other one, which I can't product place, which might be or maybe not Nescafe, have a little more of a an anti-latte feel to it. So I've got used to the non-latte flavor. I can't place that taste. It doesn't taste like latte, though.
Perhaps we should just clarify that neither of those are actual product placements. We're not getting sponsored or anything. And
No,
we
absolutely
frankly, dear
not.
listener, as we've only got you, we don't have enough listeners, unless you are the CEO of either Nestle or whoever makes Maxwell House.
No.
We're not appealing to anyone. We're not going to win. They're not going to send us bucket loads of coffee, and I wouldn't know what to do with it anyway.
Feeling quite hot. I better put some Nivea Men roll-on.
Yes, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, a bit of stubble there.
Ah, that's better.
Oh, perhaps I better
Yeah.
crack out my Wilkinson sword, razor blades there. Now,
Right.
so
Where's
everything.
my Durex? Sorry.
Indeed, you posh boy, you. Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a good weekend?
Oh, I had a good weekend. I just I thought this might be a perfect time to say Stitcher app.
It's a very good time to say that you, dear listener, can listen to us on the Stitcher app on an iPhone or an Android or on some kind of media-enabled TV or even an in-car system, which saves you downloading. You can just load us up on Stitcher and it'll stream to your device. Okay,
All right.
so could Paul McGann be returning? We don't know. We hope he is. His Doctor Who was responsible for a renaissance in Doctor Who creativity, really, back in the later 1990s. And I don't think we would have a series now if it wasn't for the TV movie, whatever you think about it. What do you think, guys? Do you think that, that single episode spurred on a range of books, comic strips, audios, and although it was a short appearance, it was a very definitive characterization that has then been taken off in so many different ways, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, even Russell T. Davis had said when he brought the new series back that he took inspiration from the TV movie. Certain aspects, not like full on, but he seemed pretty keen on it, and it seems like it had an influence on the new series. So I would say that it definitely had a big impact, not just in the fact that it kept Doctor Who alive all those years, kept it fresh, but it definitely influenced him.
James?
I don't know. I would say it probably has an influence in the fact that it gave the BBC certainty that there was an ability of having a ratings winner, because while it didn't do well in the States, it did pretty well in the on the ratings for BBC One on its premiere. So I think in that sense it was good. I was not over keen on the sense that what it also did in the same respect, it meant the BBC suddenly became interested in Doctor Who again, which meant that they pulled back their license for their books. And I never thought the range of books were quite as diverse and as groundbreaking as perhaps when they were down with the Virgin.
I think we need to clarify a few things here whilst we're throwing around the term BBC.
Yeah.
And we're discussing it here as we've just discussed it as one single entity, whereas really we've got a BBC One and a BBC Worldwide in this conversation already.
Now, yeah.
The most recent issue of Doctor Who magazine, 463, and the upcoming Green Death DVD has an extra on it, the latest edition of Doctor Forever, in which we find out that the BBC didn't know what was going on with Doctor Who, didn't care. BBC Worldwide had a survey out to find out what people thought of Doctor Who, and most people weren't interested in it, that they found in this survey. And this is slap bang in the middle of them doing all these books, releasing classic DVDs and stuff. So
what sort of year? Sorry, what era are we talking?
We're talking early 2000s, late 90s.
So this is after the McGann movie.
After the McGann movie,
right,
yeah.
Okay.
So let's just take the BBC itself, BBC One in particular. Yeah. They had no interest in Doctor at all. I don't think when it came back, it would seem from this article and from the DVD extra that there was only Lorraine Heggersey in the upper echelons and Jane Tranter that were for it in any way whatsoever, with Mal Young as a major person who had he'd even got a Paul McGann Radio Times cover on his wall, alongside things like EastEnders and Casualty,
mm-hmm.
Which helped apparently to align it as a drama rather than light entertainment, which had been previously considered. But of course, Mal Young was only executive producer for a few months, up until, I think it was one of the very first news items on Castorbris, so it would have been late 2004, very early 2005. But they, you know, Michael Grade had wanted to stop Doctor Who and told Mark Thompson. So let's pretend that for the remainder of the conversation, let's keep away from BBC One, and when we're referring to BBC, we're talking about BBC Worldwide, the people that held the license, the people that were doing...
Well, to a degree, but I would still say when you come down to actually pitching to the BBC, we want to try and bring back Doctor Who, you've got a far stronger hand if you can actually say back in 1996 when the pilot fired off, it actually got a rating success of, I can't remember, it was about 10 million. It was fairly high.
Short
of 10 million, where if you had to go back and sort of say we want to bring back Doctor Who, our last recorded ratings for the show were ducking around the 4 million, 4.5 million mark.
Yeah.
You've got a weaker trait, but I think the movie helped in that sort of sense. It did give an excuse for Doctor Who coming back on the basis that if when it aired on BBC One, there were people interested in it. So I think in that sense, I think it did a lot of good. Okay. I think also it showed it working, as we've said before, in a modern day narrative format. Okay, it was, I would say, quite a weak narrative format, very formulaic and a little too... To maybe American pilot formulaic stuff of the 90s, but it did show it working in a
non-contemporary,
cheapy, yeah, 1980s Doctor Who way, and showed it in a contemporary way.
Yeah.
So I think it did that good. As I say, I wasn't over keen in the way the BBC at the time, okay, not necessarily, we're not talking about BBC One here, but the BBC sort of re-embraced the franchise on the pedestal of hoping that the movie was going to do well. And their restrictions on the books. There were some very good books, mind you. I'm not saying, I mean, Lawrence Miles did some fantastic books.
Yeah.
Some of the Eighth Doctor books were really, really good. But
Lance Parkin did as well, didn't he?
Yeah, Lance Parkin. And they did retain a lot of the writers from the Virgin ones,
yeah.
So in that sense, I think it was they were good in that sense. But I kind of was a little irritated the way that Virgin had been carrying the license and carrying the show, carrying the franchise for so long as a canonical aspect. And then as soon as the BBC get wind of a lot of other people making a lot of effort in making this pilot for the one, they didn't get wind, but you know what I mean. They suddenly their interest in trying to make money from Doctor Who came back, but the interest didn't span enough to actually try and bring it back. It was, I don't know. So I have a sort of slight resentments to the movie because the movie wasn't that good. I don't think it really showed what Doctor Who could do, and it made a load of mistakes which it shouldn't have made. But at the same time, yeah, as you say, it did give Doctor Who a contemporary structure that you could actually show that Doctor Who is still alive and still workable.
Yeah. Okay. Brian.
Yes.
Our podcast resident Big Finish expert. 1999, we had Sylvester McCoy, Colin Baker and Peter Davison joined up with Big Finish. Big Finish get the license to do Doctor Who. Well, no, Paul McGann. And then 2 years later, they'd get Paul McGann. What did it give Big Finish for presence of Paul McGann, who at the time was the Doctor? He was the current Doctor.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it gave them. It gave them the current Doctor. It gave them a fresh start. Like, they were producing, with the previous three Doctors, they were producing new Doctor Who stories, but they were producing new Doctor Who stories for eras that had already been finished and told, their stories told. And while you can expand on that, like the books and the comic strips have always done, that was neat. You got more of them. But when you got Paul McGann, you got a new era. You got a clean slate. You got to tell stories for a new Doctor that had never had stories told for him, aside from his intro story, aside from book form, of course, and comic strips. But what I mean is, I loved the comic strips. I used to like reading them in Doctor Who magazine, and I never took to the books. I'm sorry to say. It's just whenever I read a Doctor Who book, I never felt that they captured the characters or the feel of the show to me. And that's just me. And it could be the books that I read, but that's how I felt, basically. When Big Finish did it, you have the actual actors coming in. And I don't think there's ever going to be a substitute for actually using the real actor who played the Doctor to portray that version of the Doctor better than anybody else ever could. You know, you can write lines in a book, and maybe that actor can read those books in such a way that I would sit there and go, wow, suddenly all of a sudden this feels more Doctor Who to me. But that's what Big Finish did. You got Paul McGann. You gave him the era that he never got to have on TV. And they did it brilliantly. They found a way to kind of mix the classic with the 90s style that was there, as well as expanding it so that they weren't living in the past with these stories. They were driving the stories always forward with him. And even when the new series came around, rather than continue to stick with that era that they had created, they realized, well, you know, this is the guy that comes before Christopher Eccleston. You know, forget wherever Moffat may be going right now, but this is the guy that comes before Christopher Eccleston. So why don't we adapt our stories so that we can tell them in the same kind of new series format, 45-minute episodes, and do seasons of 13 episodes? And it was neat. It felt like these Paul McGann had somehow connected the two series together better than anybody ever could through Big Finish. And that was amazing. It's just been a great ride. He's a fantastic Doctor. And, you know, the issues of the TV movie notwithstanding, what they've done with Big Finish shows how brilliant Doctor Who could have been with Paul McGann in the lead role had they had given him a proper series rather than one TV story.
I've listened to Big Finish, and I've read the books. We've got a nice selection of the books, which I'm just casting my eye over now, thinking, I could perhaps do with a reread of that one. And then, interestingly, given the topic, my eye rests on not an Eighth Doctor book, but Scream of the Shalka, with the face of Richard E. Grant leering down at me. And that reminds me that Paul McGann was obviously in the film with Richard E. Grant, with Neil and I, and they've worked together in a couple of other things since then. And it always struck me that Paul McGann was quite an effortless actor. So, with this characterisation that he managed to somehow do, despite his reservations of being the George Lazenby of Doctor Who, this characterization that he manages, and he's not even on screen, you know, it's a 90-minute TV movie, he's only on screen for about 50 minutes, something like that. Or his character is only there from, you know, half an hour in.
Yeah.
You know, Sylvester McCoy's got a massive chunk in that that movie.
Yeah.
Well, actually, if you actually watch the movie, as I did at the time, and you break it into sort of like Doctor Who episodes, it does pretty much end on the Who Am I for the first 25 minutes.
Right.
So
is it there? Is it? I thought it was a little
later.
Yeah,
pretty much there. No, I think it's about 25 minutes in, which is kind of a nice time, really, to swap over.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it is a very good performance, and he's perhaps an underrated actor in some regards. And, you know, he's constantly working. He does lots of voiceover work. He perhaps hasn't had the movie roles he should have had, I think. Or he's possibly made some bad movie choices. Queen of the Damned! But, you know, this was a strong performance. An hour, we'll call it an hour. Mm-hmm. And from the hour, we've had hundreds of books, dozens of audios, dozens of comic strips.
But it was interesting because when they went into doing even very light things, like when he came back as a doctor, the Radio Times ran a Lee Sullivan-drawn Cybermen news strip run alongside it. And there was a question, you know, because there was so little material, where you would take this doctor, because you're right, I mean, he does, to a certain degree, nail down a performance, but on a wider scope, there is so much undiscovered. So it was quite interesting at the time where he would, especially when he came back to do Big Finish, where he'd take the doctor. And to be quite honest, he didn't take it anywhere different particularly. He did really just expand on what he did before, and the writing seemed to do the same. It didn't really change vastly, do you think?
In what, Big Finish?
In Big Finish, his personality?
No, I'd have to disagree. I would say his personality, like Christian said, in that 1 hour he gave us so much. To me, he proved that he was the doctor. With Big Finish, he displays so much of what we did get to see there, you know, that childlike curiosity and you know, the devious mind that the doctor has, how sometimes he can be a little bit condescending to people, you know, all those mixed bag things that you get in any kind of good doctor and so on. But with the way, for instance, I just was re-listening to his second season with his companion, Charlie Pollard. And at the end of the second season, I mean, there's some stuff that goes on there. He makes some pretty hefty calls and does some, you know how the doctor is always kind of sometimes using his companions a little bit while really trying not to, but ends up having to, and it's not really quite the nicest thing in the world, but it's necessary to save the day. You know, they have moments like that and they weigh on him, you know, and it's very interesting, especially when you get to the end of season two and they bring in the Zagreus plot line and show what happens to the doctor when he gets infected with Zagreus. You know, you get a lot of meat and a lot of different portrayals from Paul. But later on, even with the Lucy storyline or even after, you get to see this kind of darker version of the character who's kind of tired of all the heartache that he is going through with losing his companions, kind of similar to what they had done in the new series. So I do believe that we get to see an expanded portrayal of this character and a different view of him, but at the same time you get to keep all the things that made him so likable and interesting.
But by and large, he's very much in the film, and I would say, bar the moments you're talking about, from my experience of the Big Finish plays, he is still quite a reactionary doctor in the sense that you would perhaps classify Peter Davison, or maybe even Patrick Troughton to a degree, maybe, but particularly Peter Davison, a very reactionary doctor where he's not so much in control. He is very much the contrast to the Seventh. And he is very much having to work on... he's on the back foot a lot of the time, having to try and get back onto the right foot. Would you say that would be a portrayal of the Eighth?
Well, to be honest, I think with the exception of the Seventh, what other doctor was... not like that. You know, most of them were always trying to find their way through the situations that they got themselves stuck in. The Seventh was the one who generally manipulated.
Yeah,
them.
But I would argue there are certain doctors that you would feel were in far more control than others. I would say John Pertwee, Tom Baker, Sylvester McCoy. It's thundering out here, if you hadn't noticed. I don't know if the mic's picking that up.
Yeah, definitely.
quite ominous. I would say possibly Christopher Eccleston as well. I would say they're and maybe William Hartnell are not reactionary. They're confronted with stuff they have to react to, but they're very much ones that are in control of the situations. They're not being, you don't feel...
I will have to disagree with you. And the reason being is because there are quite a number of stories where you listen to Paul and he seems like he's got an idea of what's happening, but he's not quite letting everybody in on all the facts. And, you know, much like any other doctor, he can have a thing or two wrong. And he is certainly reactionary, but I think he's also proactive in other ways. And I think that, for instance, I listened to Neverland, mm-hmm. and they pit Paul McGann up with Romana, who is the president of the Time Lords. I think she is in the books as well. And, you know, a CIA agent from Gallifrey, CIA, Celestial Intervention Agency. But it's interesting to watch him because they're thinking they're doing the best thing that they can to deal with this threat to the universe. And the doctor just keeps, you know, checking them at every moment and telling them that they're wrong. You didn't notice this. You didn't see that. We need to do this. Or flip, you know, doing sort of what Troughton used to do occasionally, for instance, in Tomb of the Cybermen, when he's trying not to let on how much he actually knows, flicking a couple switches behind their back. You know, whereas in audio, of course, he has to make it known that he's doing it, but it still works. He takes that control and he makes things happen the way that they should happen because he knows that they need to happen that way rather than the wrong moves that everybody else is making.
But
so
you
it
could,
does seem like he's ahead of the game.
But you could say, as you say, you could say it with most of the doctors because it is in the doctor's personality because he has so much intellect that there will be times where he is in control. But I personally, and I don't know whether you two either do this as well, I tend to classify doctors into sort of reactionary or proactive in a sense that there are certain doctors when I watch I don't feel comfortable in the sense that I don't feel that they're going to win, that they don't, that they're so reactionary, they're so overwhelmed, you don't feel that they have the power necessarily to win, which obviously they do. And I would put Paul McGann, I would put Patrick Troughton, I'd put Peter Davison certainly in those roles. Because they've got this sort of nervous, sort of very human energy, where they seem very, very, very taken in by the effects of what's going on as well. So they feel very, it's as if they're carrying a hell of a lot on their shoulders. And you're thinking, my God, I can't see how this guy is going to actually turn it round. And they do. But you get someone like Tom Baker or John Pertwee, and as I said, McCoy, they come across as people who, from the start, have got a sort of confidence that even when everything falls upon them, apart from very rare moments, and Tom Baker, I would suggest Pyramids of Mars is an example of this, you feel that they are pretty unstoppable. You're dealing with a superhero rather than a softer character. And I find McGann feels like a softer, more fragile character maybe, while Pertwee and Baker feel very resilient. And you don't feel too nervous that they're not going to beat the day. You don't know how they're going to do it, but you feel they will, except maybe Pyramids of Mars. What about you, Christian? Do you have... Did you feel, do you, when you watch the doctors, do you sort of have two camps that you put doctors into? Do you feel that at all? Do you feel, because I watch Peter Davison, I feel he's utterly out of control. I feel he's not got a hang, everything he does.
I agree with that, yeah.
And
yeah,
he's the real end of it. He's extreme. Then you sort of have Patrick Troughton, who, as you say, Brian, has those moments where you do feel he's quite powerful and quiet, and when he gets into his position of power you really feel like a seat of death at the end where he's dealing with Slaar on the Mars base. Even though he's under threat, he is suddenly in control of that scene, while through the rest of it he's bubbling, bumbling, rushing, trying to bang against doors to stop himself getting spored and all this sort of stuff. And then, as I say, I would say McGann sits after that, someone who is very human, very sensitive, sort of takes all information and events on a sort of very human level. You don't feel he's working on a very alien level. He takes and deals with it in a way a human would process it, it feels to me anyway, in the Big Finish ones, it feels. And then you sort of start going down the other end, where Colin Baker probably sits in the middle as a sort of slightly boorish, well, and I mean this in his original TV version, between being quite a boorish human character and being quite a sensitive one later on. I don't know, does that sort of polarization, that sort of field work with you lot?
It's not something that I, you know, actively think about. It's not, you know, I'm not watching it and thinking, oh, well, he's a bit ineffectual here, isn't it? This is the way his doctor works. Well, I completely understand what you're saying. I often think that, though, having said that, that the fifth doctor is perhaps the, as if he's almost inspired by that notion of the fourth doctor going on holiday and having a rest. It's like his entire 3 years, he just, you know, wants to go and see something nice. And things just happen, you know?
Because you almost feel that time in The Five Doctors when he's going against Bruce and he's saying, you want control of Gallifrey. Bruce is sort of going, oh, for God's sake, no, that's not what I'm after. You know, come on, keep up, for God's sake. Audience at home, work this out. Why can't you? And he seems to always be perpetually behind the baddies and to the point of thinking, how the hell is he going to complete this? He doesn't even work the plot out yet.
Yeah.
McGann is nowhere near that, but I always feel that he's one of those more sensitive, a little less in control, and certainly not as cruel.
He's got a very steely edge, though, hasn't he, the Eighth Doctor?
Yes,
you know,
I would
he comes
say
across
he has.
As quite a sympathetic, empathic guy, almost.
Yes.
With the situations that he gets into and that, but as soon as he's crossed, then he changes. He flips.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that would come into him being a very emotional character. I mean, thinking of the later Lucy Miller ones, you know, later Lucy Miller ones and the like. Because he's so emotional, you get the very soft side to him, but equally there is a very angry side. But it never feels particularly detached, like say McCoy. McCoy, while he sort of is quite a loud and can be quite an angry character. His anger always seems to be quite subdued and withdrawn, while not quite the emotional type of McGann. But I like this in McGann. I'm not trying to knock McGann at all. I like the fact that you have these doctors which aren't having to be like John Pertwee or Tom Baker.
Yeah.
I like that because it can become a bit boring to a certain degree when you feel they have so much power in the story. And I think by Graham Williams, obviously Tom Baker does, and you feel it within the character that he's almost laughing at everything as if it doesn't really matter. And that does take away from the threat.
There are a couple things. First of all, there is an interesting point that you made with how different Paul McGann is from Sylvester McCoy. Now, first of all, I don't categorize the doctors the same way that you do, although I do notice those qualities. I don't generally like stick them in. This one's more like that one kind of thing. But it is an interesting thought, and it's made me start thinking about them a little bit more. With Sylvester, though, I personally don't think we've had a doctor like Sylvester since or before. And I think that's what's very interesting. Yeah. He seemed like, you know what, I was having a lot of fun with my lives, and right now I have some things that I need to attend to because I'm just not doing it in any other form. And it's a very interesting thought because in the most recent Sylvester McCoy Big Finish play called Persuasion, you get to see Sylvester kind of going throughout the universe, and he actually gets confronted by someone that says, you know, you're doing a bit more than you normally do. You're being a bit more proactive than normal. You seem like you're all guns ahead kind of thing. And he kind of confessed that he had this feeling that his incarnation after him might not be like him, might not be so proactive. And he wanted to take care of many of these things before he regenerated and might not be willing or interested in doing these things.
Right.
And so it's very interesting that Big Finish kind of they picked up on similar aspects to what you're saying. I will say, though, with Peter Davison, I agree that he kind of had a more nervous disposition, whereas I don't feel that way with Paul McGann. I feel Paul more so. If you want to play off that human quality, I can agree with that. He is more emotional, but I think with that kind of human quality, we're taking it back to certainly things the Fourth Doctor and even the Second Doctor were interested in, and the Third Doctor at times too, which was having fun, which was exploring the universe, which was showing his companions the best things in life rather than let me take you and show you the worst things in life. But by doing so, he still has to face all of those threats and has to deal with those things. I do get the impression that Paul would probably have more fun just going to a massive party in the universe and getting to see some wonderful sights rather than go ahead and deal with the alien threats, which is something that we talked about before with the new series, where I think they have too much fun dealing with the alien threats. So I think there's that aspect. I think Paul is just, he's very different from his predecessor in the fact that he kind of probably got a little tired having the weight of the world on his shoulders all the time. And I am just going to go ahead and have some fun now, but can't always have fun because there's always trouble.
Do you think this is becoming sort of vaguely canonical? Because, I mean, I remember I think we said this before, in the Virgin novels, there was this idea that the Seventh Doctor was a reflection on the fact that the Doctor ego or id, whatever you want to call it, in decided that the threat of the Valiard was from taking the reckless Colin Baker approach to life of just wandering and being a bit carefree. and that it needed to focus itself in being a real force for good, a proactive force to good, to prevent himself becoming like the Valiard. And thus the Seventh Doctor was born and finally found his role in that sort of sense. And at the end of the reign, the Virgin Ones sort of inferred that the Doctorate would actually punish the Seventh Doctor for taking ideas and proactive roles which was often detrimental to large amounts of people for a greater good, and that was anti the Doctor, and that he would be that version would be locked in the room with no doors, as of the title of the novel, The Room with No Doors, which is this coffin where the other Doctors would place the Seventh Doctor for his crimes. And that sort of almost feels reflected, and that also explains why the Eighth Doctor was the opposite, as the Doctorid was going for something which was a little more honest, a little less manipulative, a little less grandiose in his vision, and something which was a little more free. Now we're seeing with the John Hurt issue here, where we're seeing an inference where the Doctor actually refuses to acknowledge one aspect of himself because it feels it's broken the code of who the Doctor is. And this, by the sounds of it, is what we've got here, the true Ninth Doctor, which was sort of refuted by the rest of his personalities. So while it's interesting to talk about the difference between these Doctors, because in a sense it feels like the show is actually going down this route too.
Mm.
I mean, you get it with the Ninth and the Tenth. I mean, many people have said that if the Ninth was a reaction, especially now, if we look at the Eighth, the real true Ninth, if the Eccleston Doctor was a reaction of that Ninth Doctor, and is a reaction of guilt and of turbulence and upset from the war, that is lost when Rose helps reconcile that, and he regenerates into a far more carefree Doctor, which, as we've said before, Brian, as you were just intimating, is a Doctor which is too carefree to really make us feel the severity of the things he's dealing with. And then again, you have this very morbid, at the end of his talk, someone who feels very burdened by his mistakes, and then you have the 11th Doctor, who again is a lot lighter again. So are we still seeing that?
You know, you can still argue, though. First of all, what you said, it makes what's potentially going to happen with her start actually sounding okay to me, to be honest. It would seem to be an interesting thing that the Doctor, his current and past selves, kind of punish a version of himself who did something horrible. However, at the same time, you take a man like Paul McGann, you put him in the Time War, and just like any human or anybody that's ever fought in a war, people have done bad things that they ordinarily would not have done had they not been in a warlike situation. So while you say that Paul McGann may be too carefree, you don't know what he can do because he is still the Doctor. You put him in a war situation, he's going to do something. Whether it was him who pulled the trigger and sent the Time Lords and the Daleks, with that trap into the time-locked war, or whether it was Eccleston, or whether it's going to have been hurt. The point is that I truly believe that any one of the Doctors could have actually done that moment. The desperation and the situation has to call for it, because we've seen many times a Doctor with his back against the wall about to do something horrible before he finally figures out another way. You know, but we did see the Ninth Doctor shy away from that at one point, you know, like, so it actually does sort of suggest that the Ninth Doctor might not be capable of that and might not have been the one that did it in the war.
But maybe that's the point, isn't it, as you say, because we've seen examples like Genesis of the Daleks is a fantastic example, and I imagine it's going to be rooted in maybe the issue with the John Hurt Doctor, where the Doctor is close to committing a genocide and steps back. And, you know, this Ninth Doctor probably didn't step back.
I will say, though, just it's a little bit more interesting to me, rather than create a Doctor like Hurt, who is this made-up incarnation that did something so horrible that Doctors don't want anything to do with him. It would be a little bit more interesting to me to take that carefree, that emotional and that happy Eighth Doctor, and have him be the one to do the thing that nobody would have ever expected that he would have done. And I think that if we take that away from him in a way, it kind of cheapens the fact that this character has so much more to them that we just don't know about. So those are the things that made me concerned about the Hurt Doctor.
And that's what we assumed, didn't we? We assumed, naturally, that it was the Ninth, I did anyway, that the Eighth Doctor did the Time War, regenerated into the Ninth Doctor after. So we all assumed, and Big Finish seemed to have assumed as well, the way it's been going, that was the idea.
And I like the idea. I think it's a great idea. It really, it's very telling for the character. It's very interesting. It's a new step, and it really expands on the lore of that character.
Yeah.
So bringing in somebody else, and, you know, we talked about this before. This is what Moffat's doing. He's rewriting Doctor Who history to suit himself. If that's the case, he just took away from that character that had so much more interesting things about him, in my opinion. Granted, haven't seen the 50th. Don't know how it's going to go. Could be very good. I don't know. I just think it would be a shame to take something like that away from this character like that, because clearly you've already put him in a corner that you didn't think, for the most part, he was capable of being that proactive.
Yeah.
But you did have in your mind the fact that he was the one who did pull the trigger in the Time War, which shows how interesting the dynamics of that can be.
Yep, yeah. I agree with that.
Okay. Well, look, Eighth Doctor, an enigma in many ways. In others, we know everything about him thanks to, you know, books, audios, comic strips. Will we see him in the 50th anniversary? We don't know at the moment, but fingers crossed that we do. It is recommendations time. We're at that stage of the podcast. So, and Brian, would you like to go first this week?
I am actually going to recommend a Paul McGann play, just keeping in spirit, but also because I literally just listened to it the other day, which is Seasons of Fear, and I hope I didn't recommend this recently. I know I spoke with somebody else about it, but it's a very well done play, I think, and they play with a kind of time paradox in an interesting way, and kind of essentially the Doctor gets pitted with a situation where he knows a little bit about his future, and when you know about your future, you can't go back and change it because you create a paradox. But the very fact that this person let him know about his future, he said, kind of changed the rules and is allowing me to go back and fight with it. It was a very interesting take on how they did it. And it was a very neat story. And the ending, the way that they wrapped it up, was not something I originally expected. So I definitely would recommend Seasons of Fear.
Okay.
And outside of that, TV-wise, I was actually giving Planet of Spiders a watch the other day. And I was really enjoying that one again. It's you know, as we all know, it's Pert last. But yeah, it was nice to see Mike Yates back. And Sarah Jane's always a good treat to watch, and you know, John Pertwee's in top form. I think it was a good watch.
Okay, well, actually, that was one of my recommendations a few weeks ago as well.
Oh yeah, yes.
Okay, James.
I would recommend hopefully getting excited for the 50th. Do you ever get that feeling? Do you ever think, oh my God, I don't want to die before the next season of so-and-so. Wouldn't it be awful to die and never get to see the next so-and-so? Do you ever have that?
I have thought of that, yeah.
No.
I have. I've got that feeling a bit now. You know, hearing the possibility of McGann being in there and obviously the Time War, I'm now actually getting quite interested to see what happens. And I'm thinking, God, I hope I don't peg it before then. I really want to find out what happens. So, yes, one of the things I'm saying is I'm recommending getting a little more excited about the 50th.
Okay.
The Ark is my recommendation. I was thoroughly impressed with that. The last two episodes I go a little back onto standard form and not quite as strong, but the cliffhanger to season two, it just feels so refreshing, and I didn't realise quite what little gems there were in the latter half of William Hartnell's era. So yes, definitely The Ark.
Okay. Well, I've received the discs from the fourth Doctor box, the time capsule box set. So I don't have a sonic screwdriver. I don't have a fourth Doctor newly regenerated in the third Doctor's outfit figure. Or I don't even have the audio of Genesis of the Daleks. But what I do have... I know. But what I do have is Terror of the Zygons.
Mm.
So, you know. But there's also, which I will talk about next week, there's an interview with Tom Baker on the second disc.
Oh.
Ah. So I will be watching that in the next few days. So that's a kind of a future recommendation, basically.
Oh, that's very, very fitting for a time travel-based podcast.
Indeed, that's what I was thinking as well.
Can I just ask before we go, because I think we should just cover this very, very quickly. What do you think are the chances of McGann being in the 50th, and are you both excited by that?
I'm excited by it, definitely. I think the chances, well, who knows? I mean, he's been making some very odd tweets of late, as Mr. McGann, and he doesn't tweet often anyway.
And there was this comment, wasn't there? From that was in the Radio Times, wasn't it? That suggested that there was another Doctor that might be involved.
Yeah,
Brian.
I am definitely excited by it. I would love to see. I've been wanting to see him come back for quite a long time in the new series.
I've been wanting to see him come back since 1996, personally.
Right.
Yeah, beat that, Brian.
Yeah, right. Now, I'm with him, honestly, but, you know, even so much as saying, you know, why have a spinoff of something like Torchwood and Sarah Jane, and instead of doing like a spinoff of the Eighth Doctor era, like these missing years, you know, it doesn't have to air alongside Doctor Who. And I know people will say you're competing with your main show, but I think it would be great. I think it would be an interesting thing. Just do like a mini series of the missing era. But I would love to see him come back. What do I think that it would be? What shape or form? Personally, Moffat seems very into his prequel, online prequels right before the episode. So I think it's going to be a tie-in prequel. I would be surprised if it's actually in the 50th. Hmm. Would love it if it's in the 50th. I would be happy even if it's a prequel because it would be something new with him. But my feelings are it's going to be separate from the 50th. And I'll take what I can get because I would just love to see him come back.
Plus, there goes back to what you were saying before a few months ago, Christian, about how Moffat was very pro McGann in the Big Finisher days. So
there is the other thing, though. It might just be what Paul McGann is quite famous for these days. It might just be voiceover.
Yeah, that's true.
It was on the Master was finally put on.
If it's going to be voiceover, who's really going to know McGann out of the new series? It's the same. It goes back to the same thing.
Like, well, it's 50th anniversary. It doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter if any of the new fans know who he is or not. It's for everyone.
Well, it does. It does matter because you take for instance the Doctor's mother, and I'm going to call her that because that's what she was intended to be, and that's what Russell wrote her about in the End of Time.
Or Clara.
Everybody wanted her to be Rose. They wanted her to be Donna. They wanted her to be Ramona, Clara, Susan, and so on. You can call her Clara if you want. The fact is, you're not going to write a character that people can't see or have no clue who they are without telling the audience directly who they are. Uh-huh. If it's a classic character. Because if you're going to bring in a classic character into the new series like this, you have to remember that a lot of your viewer base has not seen the classic show.
Yeah, so but the TV movie did this. TV show. Movie started off with a voiceover. It was on the planet Scarrow that my old enemy, the Master, was finally put on trial.
And you got to see Paul McGann in that story. You know
later on.
Yeah. So you're telling me then if there's going to be a voiceover with Paul McGann, you'll get to see him later on?
I don't know. No one knows.
See, this is what I'm saying. If he just does a voiceover, it's pointless because most new viewers are going to be, who's this guy? Unless he goes, I am the eighth version of myself. And this is what happened. It's ridiculous.
What happened when I turned into the ninth version of myself who wasn't the ninth version of myself.
Right. It would have to
and
be
And then became
thing.
The ninth version of myself who wasn't the ninth version of myself but considered himself
but that
the
ninth being said, version of myself. He could be in there just simply. Could he not be in there just simply for a generation?
Could be.
Because
could be.
In a sense, you wouldn't need to do a big scene with him. He could go in for a day and do that, where he doesn't actually have a specific role, but it would have sense within the context of the story to introduce the John Hurt. In fact, you could even argue that if you could get McGann narratively, it only really establishes who Hurt is if you carry that regeneration, especially since you can't do it at the other end because you lost Eccleston.
Let's not go into that.
Yeah, let's not go into that. But so, yeah, it's all very, very exciting. It's genuinely got me exciting. Not because there's a token appearance of an old Doctor, but because there could be something really quite interesting to the mythology being played out within this 50th anniversary. So that has got me interested.
Cool. Well, that is the end of the podcast for this week. So thank you for joining us, dear listener. Thank you for downloading or streaming or tuning in.
Or stitching. Is that what you do with Stitcher? Do you to stitch?
I believe that is what you do.
Stitcher cast.
And even thank you for listening to us in the future after you've picked the radio waves up as they float past Jupiter.
Oh, yeah, you're still hopeful on that, aren't you? That someone somewhere out there will pick up the missing podcast. And
indeed. Until next time, dear listener, goodbye. Have they gone?
I think so.
Okay, excellent.
Looks like the thunder's sodded off as well.